Okay.
Sometimes it works.
Welcome back. So we had skipped around. We had gone off to look at shofar things before Rosh Hashanah. Have we not had shear since Rosh Hashanah?
We have not had shear since Rosh Hashanah.
Because everything was on Tuesdays.
Everything was on Tuesdays.
So, right. So anyway, let's go back to the beginning of the parak. There's a curiosity about the way the Masecht is organized.
Excuse me, what are you talking about? What is the subject?
That's exactly what I'm describing now. The first parak, which we had spent a bit of time in, deals with these topics related to Rosh Hashanah and dating of shtarot and those types of things. The third parak, which we had looked at, ultimately from daf kaf vav omud aleph, the Mishnah towards the top deals with shofar and related topics. But the first Mishnah in the parak seems to be out of place. The first Mishnah in the Perek really may be meant to be the last Mishnah in the previous Perek, which deals with the topic of Kiddush HaChodesh, right? The sanctification of the new moon and related topics. Because after all, Rosh Hashanah is also Rosh Chodesh, right? Even though it's hidden over. Right? Some say that's what the meaning of Tiku'u, of Ben Kese La Asor, this nickname, right, of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, Ben Kese. Kese means Kisui, hidden, right? So how is Rosh Hashanah hidden? Because the new moon is hidden, right? Or it might mean that it's a holiday that has an aspect which is hidden, meaning the Rosh Chodesh aspect of Rosh Hashanah is overlooked. Ad kedei kach, that we don't say Hallel. Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is...
Was there a korban for Rosh Chodesh?
So the korban for Rosh Chodesh is there, but it's subsumed within the other korbanot. But it's never referred to as Rosh Chodesh. It's never referred to as Chodesh. It's never... And although of course, Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag. It's one of the examples of minhagim. Normally we don't say brachot on minhagim. Now by minhag, I mean there's two different types. When we talk about minhag, there's minhag with a capital M and there's minhag with a lowercase m. There's a lowercase m minhag to eat ozne haman, homentashen on Purim, or sufganiot on Hanukkah. Right? That's a lowercase M. Then there are minhagim with a capital M. Minhagim that most people would be hard pressed to distinguish between a minhag as a kind of accepted custom of the Jewish people versus an actual halakha, either a din d'oraita or d'rabbanan. So, for example, on Hoshana Rabbah, everybody clapped Hoshanas, right? You took those Hoshanas, you whacked them on the floor. And then after we're done whacking the Hoshanas, there's that, whatever it is, that Yehiratzon, right? Minhagen, and it's a minhag, but it's a minhag that's very antique. Right? But nevertheless, it's a minhag. Right? It's not a halacha. Somebody that didn't beat the Hoshanas.
Where does it go back to?
So that's, I don't know. I'm sure it is known. But and I'm sure that a trip to Wikipedia will give you more information than you need. Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. But from when? But when did they start doing it? I don't know. Whether it goes back, the idea of the whacking, right? In other words, the arava. Of course, the arava. The ikar arava is what?
In Arba Minim.
Then there's the Arava that they would bring in Mikdash. Did anyone go to that festival they had here, the Nisuach HaMayim? They had on one of the days of Chol HaMoed at the Tamar. I guess it's more for people that have little kids. Yeah, you don't even. But you know, when you don't have little kids anymore, sometimes you have grandchildren that you have to watch. So anyway, they had a very nice festival. So they had Machon HaMikdash had a thing, and they had like a model of the like a scale model of the Mizbeach. But it was big. Like they had somebody standing up there, and they did every hour on the hour they did the Nisuach HaMayim. Right, of what it looked like, of how they did the Nisuach HaMayim. And they had this arava. If you look in the picture books from the Machon HaMikdash, you can see pictures of it. They had this arava. It looked like a tree,
yeah.
Right? And like our tree out here. Like it's amazing how fast these things grow. And they had this arava, and they would stand it up by one of the corners of the Mizbeach. Because the arava is what? What's like the main point of the arava?
Water.
It's an extremely thirsty plant. That's why they tell you you shouldn't plant it in your backyard. When we moved in, I wanted to have an arava. Because I remembered my grandparents had this beautiful weeping willow tree in their backyard. But the gardener told us, don't do it. Because the roots are so strong and so thirsty and they go so deep, they inevitably get into, they can smell, the roots can smell through the pipe, the biuv, and they crack the, after a while they crack the pipe to get into the water, and it ruins everything. But so why did, yes, so
long distances also.
Yeah, they can go.
They go like 50 meters away.
Yeah, yeah. And but it's that's why it's the Arvei Nachal. They naturally grow, like in nature, they will naturally grow by water sources, by Nachal, right? But the Arava is connected on Sukkot to the idea of the Nisuach HaMayim, and then towards the end we have Tfilat Geshem, and the idea that somehow all of these rituals are connected to our consciousness of our need for rain. I don't want to say that it's you know, some kind of ritual which brings the rain, like the Jewish equivalent of the rain dance of the Native Americans, right? But
someone else
would have said such a thing.
On WhatsApp, the scene from Frisco Kid.
Yeah,
oh yes, right. Anyway, but others would say such things. But I'm saying no. These are rituals that were instituted to, like most of our rituals, they're there to kind of direct our attention to where our thoughts should be directed. This is a time of year where we're being judged, and part of the judgment has to do with water, because after all, what was water? What was rainfall?
Life.
In what way was it life? It wasn't
agriculture.
Yeah, in other words, it was, you know, like on the back page of the newspaper, they always have that thing with the Miflas HaKnesset. We need one for the Miflas HaKnesset. The Miflat HaKineret,
yeah.
Right? The Miflas HaKineret, right? Is it up? Is it down? Is it above the Kav Adom? Is it, you know, it's like not for real, the Kav Adom.
The Kav Adom moves.
Because it's a movable yard line, right? You could always just make it lower. But I remember there was a period when we used to get the newspaper delivered at home, when people still used to do such a thing. And, you know, it shows you how the kids are brought up here, right? That they have this real consciousness of like the Chaval Kol Tipa. And I remember Shalom when he was little, when he was like 6, 7, every day he would look at the newspaper to see did the Kav HaMayim go up or down. And it was the equivalent of the stock market.
It's sometimes called Miflas HaLeumi.
The Miflas HaLeumi. No, but it's just like in the newspaper, you can look to see where's the market. Is it up? Is it down? Is the Dow up? Is the Dow down? So if the Kineret is up or down, it's the same as, is this, why? Because if there's not rain, that's why the bracha of Parnasa in Shmoneh Esrei is the bracha of Barech Aleinu. It's the bracha in which we ask for v'tein talu matai levracha, right? Because and the absence of rain or the presence of rain was also understood to be some kind of barometer about where we were be'enei Hashem, right? So the arava is connected to all of these things.
Is there a meaning, the fact that the people need to go to place down Jerusalem to get this Arava and back to the temple?
And it's Motza, right? Now there's Motza, and you know what Motza is, right?
Right, like, below Harnof.
Right below Harnof. So that's where they would go to bring the Aravot, because I think that's where the Aravot grew.
Because they bring from there,
yeah,
bring back, and they until the tail is broken.
Yeah. But why? That you're asking why Dafka from Motza?
Yeah.
I mean, I think historically speaking, that was a place that had Aravot. They had Aravot in abundance. Jerusalem, which is a rocky, dry city, probably didn't have that many Aravot. So.
Good quality Aravot. One was Mozart. Get the other one. So they said, get from anywhere. You can even take Aravot from Kutzlaritz.
Some people are makbid. You know, like we have, here's an Arava right here, which people, by the way, here's a halacha that not everybody in the community was aware. You know, we have this Arava that grew, and we allowed people to snip Arava. You know, sometimes in the middle of Chag, you need a fresh pear. So we learned in Sukkah a number of years ago the din of Niktam Rosho. Niktam Rosho, Nifritzu Alav, right? If you're Lulav, right, you know, you have to be most careful with the tippy top. Because if the tippy top gets smashed or squashed or cut, it's puzzle. That's true for the other minim as well. Right, in other words, your aravot, your hadasim have to be three tefachim long. But it's three tefachim from the right. So if I have here, put your hand up, put your arm out. Let's say this is an arava branch. So if I need three tefachim, I need to start from here and count down and a little bit. Actually, I cut it from here. But there's still another three tefachim because it was very long. So if I cut this off, whatever's left is called niktam rosho. So when one day I came to take aravot, so I saw there were a lot of the lower branches. Someone had already clipped them. So you know, towards the end of Chag, you had to like reach up a little higher or even go up to the bus stop.
Well, that's why it's next to the step.
Yes. So, but I saw that there was someone who like was unaware of this halacha. He took a nice branch but it was puzzle. So you have to know that when you're clipping the aravot. Now next year where you clipped it, so what'll happen is that new growth will come out of it. And sometimes it'll even split into two, right? And then you can clip those off for next year. But in the meantime it's Niktam Rosho.
I think they actually, when they first, last year, 2 years, a couple of years ago, when they first made it available, they I think they announced it, but they should definitely clarify it every year.
So, okay, Arava, how do we get onto the topic of Aravot?
Permitash.
Permitash, Geshem,
Rosh Hashanah,
Rosh
Chodesh.
Written with Rosh Chodesh. Minhag. You're fit.
Minhag with a capital M and with a small.
So Minhag with a capital M is to whack your aravot. Lighting candles on Friday night, Shabbos candles, Yontif candles, that is a halacha. It's a halacha derabanan, but it's a halacha. You know, it's like one of those examples of a mitzvah derabanan that you can even say asher kiddushanu b'mitzvot avan, even though he wasn't mitzvah. The chachamim were mitzvim. That's like a question, like how can we say asher kiddushanu b'mitzvot avan a derabanan? Because when you do a derabanan, you're also doing a deraisa. Right? But okay, that's an answer. But there are even minhagim that we say brachotan. There is no rabbinic obligation to light candles on Yom Kippur night. Because the lighting of candles has to do with Oneg Shabbat. Right? The idea, Chazal had an idea that it's not nice to eat in the dark. So you could not have timed that more perfectly.
So, it's not on purpose. I was trying to get the other one, which turned on the other lights.
Chazal had an idea that it's not nice to eat in the dark. Right? So as they said, you won't enjoy your meal. You won't enjoy your meal, so you have to light candles. This does not apply on Yom Kippur. But there's a minhag, nevertheless. You can understand how the minhag might have developed. I don't want to say it's a minhag ta'ut. Right? You know what a minhag ta'ut is? Some people do out of ignorance. Right? but you can understand how it might have developed. Okay.
Shabbat Shabbaton.
Right? No, in other words, on Wednesday, on Wednesday night, on Thursday, on any night of the year, you might light a candle if you have a need. Right? Because right? But the idea that you ritually light a candle, right, and recite a bracha, but the idea, the women understood that, like, you know, lighting candles is somehow connected to Yontif, even if we're not eating. That it somehow is
learn Torah. I mean, what do you do after the panel when you go home?
Yeah, but you're not allowed to learn Torah by the light of the Shabbos candles.
Oh, why?
Yeah. No,
why not by light of Shabbos candles? Hanukkah candles made, but why not by light of Shabbos?
Because Chazal said that we're afraid you'll fix the wick or you'll tilt it so that the light will be cast a little. You shouldn't. Hanukkah candles is a different problem.
Why would
problem.
That be different There's, for eating yeah. versus learning?
Because when you learn, you get engrossed in what you're doing and you get distracted, right? And there's a fear that you will.
He's saying that some people do that when they eat also.
Yeah.
not the majority.
It's a gzeira d'rabbanan that one should not read by the light of the Shabbat candles. In reality, in our homes, it's irrelevant because we leave on the electronic lights and everything else. You know, when we were first married, if we were eating by ourselves, we would set the Shabbat clock so that it was dark except for the Shabbat candles. It's very romantic. And then you know what happens?
It gets windy.
No.
First kid comes along.
It's not that love fades. It's that the children arrive. And by the time there are no kids any longer, we'll be so nearly half blind, we won't be able to sit in the dark like that anymore.
So before the advent of electricity, people learn on Friday nights.
They didn't, but people, you know, didn't. Despite what the Rambam says about like the value of learning at night, probably in reality, very few people learned at night in antiquity.
Oh, well, forget antiquity. 150 years ago.
50 years ago.
150
years ago.
Why not? Why
that's antiquity.
Well,
maybe they had. It's the Shabbat candles. It's the Shabbat candles that you can't learn by. But if you had an overhead chandelier, you know what a chandelier means. What's the shorish of the word chandelier? Chandelier, a candle, right? So, and as if there was other lights, so then you were allowed to.
But I think the question was, why wouldn't you have the same chashash with another light?
Seder, okay, in other words.
Things that go out of chain and they pull them up.
Yeah, it was out of reach. It wasn't, you know, we didn't think we were going to go get a ladder and climb up it to, you know.
I'm not a bit of chandelier. We've got half a dozen candles, too. So it seems a little bit.
Look, Chazal couldn't tell you, like, you're not allowed to, like, if you see, like, the printed word, you have to cover it up. Right? But the idea of sitting and reading Be'iyun next to the Shabbat candles is. Anyway.
Unfortunately, we don't have that challenge. Lights.
Yes. You can fall asleep at the
should be our biggest problem. I leave a light on in my study, like all night long, on a Shabbat clock. But you know, first because I don't like the idea like the house is pitch dark all night long. Like if a kid is sick in the middle of the night, if whatever. But also, I'm always afraid if I can't fall asleep. And I'll want to read when the light goes off in my bedroom. I'm stuck. But it's been years since that's happened. Right? There's never a situation. Yes. So anyway, we're very far off track. Rosh Chodesh. Saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag, right? But yet we say a bracha on it.
Ashkenazim,
say a bracha. We're Ashkenazim, yeah? We're Ashkenazim. Say a bracha on it. Although not all Ashkenazim do. They're Ashkenazim that don't say a bracha on Hallel. There are people that, they're Ashkenazim that are Yotzei to the Shliach Tzibur. The Shliach Tzibur says the bracha, you say Amen. But most people, most... most normative Ashkenazim say a bracha.
Sfaradim don't say a bracha and halal.
Because it's only, because it's merely a mitzvah. That's the Rambam. So, okay. Rosh Chodesh, okay. Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Hashanah. So, Ru Betin V'chol Yisrael. This first sugya is probably connected to the end of the previous parak. How it got here and what is a separate question. So the Mishnah says, we're on Daf Kaf Hey Omid Beis.
Was everything until now just introduction to get to the Mishnah?
It was a little bit being sidetracked, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And welcoming Mayer to the assembly.
Welcome.
Mayer thinks that we're all teetotalers because he comes and he sees there's no liquor here.
Mm-hmm. We need Saul back.
Yeah.
I was lucky to escape from all the conversations at work that people were trying to have with me, so I didn't have time to put it in.
Okay. Re'uhu betin v'chol Yisrael. If the betin and the entirety of the Jewish people see it, what's it? It is the moon, the new moon. Now you know in the times of Chazal, there was Kiddush al pi Re'iyah. Right? Witnesses would see the sliver of the new moon. They would run to the Betin. Which Betin? The Betin Agadol, the Sanhedrin. And they would testify about the new moon. And the Betin would sanctify the new moon. Now, what does this mean? How many days are there in a month?
Well, no. 29 days, 11 hours.
No.
In a month.
In a
month. So sometimes two, sometimes one.
In other words, Rosh,
in a month, there could
in a,
be
in a Jewish month, in a lunar Jewish month, there are either 29 or 30 days.
Well, but not astronomical. Actually, in actual fact, the month is the same length.
No. The month of Cheshvan and the month of, right? No. You're talking, it depends on how you define month.
The appearance, the actual physical appearance of the moon, whether it's seen or not,
yeah.
It's going to be 29 days, 11 hours, whatever.
But you can't, run a calendar that way, right? So, so you say either it's 29 or it's 30, and it kind of averages out. But it doesn't matter. It's Rosh Chodesh when the Betin says it's Rosh Chodesh, with certain limitations. So if on the 30th, it's by coincidence, here we are on the Tefer between 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. Yesterday, meaning 4 hours ago, was what date?
The 30th.
Yesterday was the 29th.
Yes.
Yes.
Yesterday was the 30th.
Yesterday was Lamed.
Oh yeah, yesterday was the yeah right.
Of Tishrei.
Right.
Okay.
It's now the first
right.
of
Tishrei. Right. If the 29th is the 29th. But they're not sure on the 29th. If tomorrow is going to be the 30th, and it will be what's called a full month, a Malay, or if tomorrow will be the first, and the previous month retroactively was a chaser, a defective month. So on the day after the 29th, 29 plus 1, and we're unsure what this is, Bet Din opens for business in the morning, and they wait. On the night before, right? Meaning last night, was the new moon seen? Oh, shekeno shalom, right? Maybe it was cloudy. Maybe it wasn't seen because maybe the molad was at a bad hour or something. And they wait. On this day 29 plus 1. I can't say it's the 30th day because maybe it's really the first day.
If they could,
Edom
come.
The Edom come. Ra'uhu betin v'chol Yisrael. Meaning, it was everybody saw it. What does it mean, v'chol Yisrael? Every single Jew in the world?
Everybody was looking.
So that's what the Ritva. The Ritva says it's a guzma. It means it was clear, it was mifursam. Anybody that wanted to could have seen it. But the Betin themselves also saw it. Nechkaru ha'edim. The witnesses are examined. You know these mishnayot from the second perek, right? They'd ask some questions about where did you see it and how did you look and was it pointing this way or was it pointing that way? Was it at low on the horizon? Was it high on the horizon? Was it right? Because maybe they didn't get it right. Maybe they saw a flying saucer and they confused it for the moon. Usually the moon was confused for the flying saucer. Or maybe what?
Maybe they just wanted their moment in the spotlight.
Maybe they wanted their moment in the spotlight.
Or in the moonlight.
Or they're trying to confuse everybody.
Or they, why would they want to confuse everyone?
They're kind of person.
What?
I don't know.
Well, you know that there were different...
Historically, they're the reason for it.
There were different periods of time where there were heretical sects that wanted to calculate things differently, and they may have wanted to mess things up. Right? There's all types of reasons that someone may have. But they would come and they would give testimony. Nechkura edim, velo hispiku lomar mikudash ad shechshecha, and the Betin somehow did not manage to sanctify the moon, to say mikudash. It is sanctified before sunset, and what happens at sunset?
Next day.
Well, whether it's next day or it's not, it's sunset is the end of business for Betin. Right? Betin does not sit at night. Hare zem ubar. So we say that it's a 2-day Rosh Chodesh. That this day, 29 plus 1, in fact, was the 30th. And tomorrow will be the 1st. That's why we have some months. In our permanent calendar, it's not that there's sometimes 2 days Rosh Chodesh and sometimes 1 day Rosh Chodesh. Right? We treat certain months as if they're 2 day Rosh Chodesh. Right? In fact, there's only, as you said, there's only one moment of the arrival of the new moon. Right?
That's the moment.
That's right. No, but in other words, it could have in our permanent calendar. It could have also been that Rosh Chodesh is always on the 1st. Sometimes the 1st is the day after the 29th, and sometimes the 1st is the day after the 30th. Why do they set it that we have Rosh Chodesh 2 days?
Because I have no idea, but I would guess that because when they would be Mekadesh Lachodesh, in the middle of the day, that they would have
becomes retroactively
Rosh Chodesh.
Right.
So we're commemorating.
Right. We'll see later on when we go back. They even made it more strict than Ad Shechashecha. Because what happens? It's 10 minutes before the Shkia. It's 10 minutes before Shkia. The Edim come, right? And they say and the Edim, their testimony goes through. It's perfectly. Today everybody would come. They would have captured it on the phone, right? So
and they say it's mikudash.
But what? There's only. How are you going to bring the korban musaf? Right. How are you going to sing halal? How are you going to do whatever you have to do?
So I was going to ask
right?
that also.
How are you going to say mincha all over again with the aliyah?
Right. That's less of a problem. But you know what Chazal were concerned about? Not halal and not the aliyah, right? But and even more than the musaf. The shir shel yom. Shema yitkalkalu halavim b'shir. Maybe the Levim said the wrong shir shel. You know, we're not so careful today. What shir shel yom did we say here today?
Both of them.
Right? We said the shir shel yom of Yom Shlishi, and we said Kuf Dalet, which is plenty long on its own. Right?
But Tuesday was short, Tuesday, so it was okay. Tomorrow it's a problem.
Yeah. No, there's no problem. Follow the opinion of the Gra and only say Borchi Nafshi. Right? According to Vilna Gaon, you should only ever say one Shir Shel Yom. Right? And on Yontif and on Rosh Chodesh, the Shir Shel Yom of the special day, like in the Machzor, it has in the back. Right? That Shir Shel Yom replaces the regular Shir Shel Yom, except on Shabbat. The Shir Shel Yom for Shabbat always takes precedent, except on Rosh Chodesh. But Rosh Chodesh, according to the Gra, Borchi Nafshi overrides even Shushal Mishal Yom HaShabbat. Now, independent of this, if you're a Gronik as I am, like so this morning, I didn't say the Shir Shal Yom Shlishi. I said the Borchi Nafshi. But before I started saying Borchi Nafshi, what did I say? I said Hayom Yom Shlishi B'Shabbos. Why did I say that? I didn't say Hayom Shlishi Shabbos Shabbo Hayu Halavim Omrim Bebeit HaMikdash. Right? I said Hayom Yom, because what happens when you say Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos Hayom Yom Sheni B'Shabbos?
There's an amount of counting the days relating to
that's how we're Mekayim Zechorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Right? That we count the days, right? Our time consciousness is rooted in the build up to Shabbat, according to Beis Hillel. Right? So every day when you say the Shir Shal Yom, which is a minhag, it's a minhag to say the Shir Shal Yom, zecher lo what they used to do in Beit HaMikdash. But you're also fulfilling a principle of keeping Shabbat in mind. So if you don't say the regular Shir Shal Yom, you miss out on that. So you should make it. You should be careful to say Hayom Yom Shlishi, Hayom Yom Revi'i LeShabbat, but not to say Shabbo Hayu Halavim Omrim BeBeit HaMikdash, because
if you're a
Gronik, if you just say the Borchi Nafshi.
Just regarding what we the first line of the Mishnah, everyone saw it. The
Betin saw it. The eight, the whole
right.
Nation.
Lo Hispiko, right?
There was, for whatever reason, there wasn't enough time.
Okay, so
Harizim
Ubar, meaning again,
meaning that this day is not the first of the month.
Mubar means
Mubar means the previous month. No,
previous month. 2 days.
Mubar. What is a mu'ubarit?
You've got the extra.
a woman who's carrying a little something extra.
Yeah.
Mubar means it's the previous month has the extra day.
Okay, but what day are we talking about here?
29th.
No, the 30th. Right?
Okay.
In other words, again.
But if it's the 30th again. And we weren't Mekadesh the month on the 30th.
On the day after the 29th,
yeah.
We sat around all day. If Edim come and we sanctify the moon, then today, we don't know how to sign our checks yet. Do we sign it the 30th or do we sign it the 1st? Right? If the Edim come and we sanctify it before sunset, then this day is Rosh Chodesh, it's the 1st.
Okay.
Oh no, maybe they came in the first hour of the day. Right? Maybe, right?
Yeah.
If no Edim come, right? Maybe it was a rainy night and nobody saw the moon. Right? Or maybe Edim came and there was something possible
so
about each and every one of them.
You say the 30th is Rosh
Chodesh. So we say, no.
Okay.
We're already past the end of the 29th.
Okay.
We are on the day. Listen.
Can I say one thing? When they did Kiddush HaChodesh, there were no 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. It was either there was the 29th and the next day was one, or the next day was the 30th and the following day was one. There were no 2 days of Rosh Chodesh.
You go to sleep on the night of the 29th.
Okay.
The stars come out, maybe there'll be a moon, maybe there won't be a moon.
Okay.
If there's a sliver of a moon, Edim are going to come in the morning of the day following the 29th and say, today's Rosh Chodesh, we saw the moon a couple hours ago in the evening sky. The Betin will say, Mekudesh, and today is the first, it's Rosh Chodesh. Until that takes place, that whole day, the day following the 29th, is Safek. Maybe it's the 30th, or maybe it's
the first.
If no Edim come at all, it was a cloudy night, no Edim come, they sit around, right, b'safek, obviously it's not Rosh Chodesh, so at the end, that day becomes de facto the 30th, and at that night,
Motzei the 30th.
So Mu'ubar means the previous month was impregnated with another day.
Right?
What's the irony here? It's not that the Molad didn't come, or it's not that the sky was cloudy. In fact, It's very well known that the evening before everyone saw the new moon. And for whatever technical reason we didn't, we could, Betin couldn't get their act together, or the Edim couldn't get their act together, maybe Edim came, and every pair of Edim was a schlamazel, right? And they give expert witness testimony, right? And it's exactly punk bidiyuk, they're like two us. You get Astro Tom and he knows exactly what he's doing, etc. And you say, oh, okay, we're about to be Makadesh the Chodesh, right? And one aide turns to the other one and says, Bini, we did it well. So what do you mean, Bini? Right? They're posulatum.
Right.
So, okay, they're out. Right? They're out on a technicality.
Right.
But everybody knows, astronomically, today, in fact, was Rosh Chodesh. But for whatever, until Bet Din says Mikudash, it isn't Rosh Chodesh. Mikadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. Mikadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. Tzvi is obviously referring to the famous Torah of Rabbi Soloveitchik. That's the difference between the bracha on Shabbat and the bracha on Chag. When is Shabbat?
The seventh day of the week.
The seventh day of the week. When was the previous Shabbat?
7 days before that.
When was the previous Shabbat?
7 days before.
And if you go all the way back, 7 days, 7 days, 7 days, long enough, what are you going to get to? Masa Bereshit. Right? When does Shabbat become sanctified?
When the sun goes down on the seventh day.
What do I have to do to make that happen?
Nothing.
Nothing. It happens on its own with or without me. Now, it happens that Dirabanan, there's an obligation to add on a little bit to Shabbat. That I have the power to sanctify the Shabbat and to cause it, at least rabbinically, to enter my life before it comes on its own. Right? Now in the summer when people make early Shabbat, you can't do it, I can't do it right now. Like right now on Tuesday, if I light candles and I say Lichadodi and I spin around and I make Kiddush, right? It's not Shabbat. But after Plaga Mincha, in this window of time, late on Friday afternoon, I can already usher Shabbat in early, and it's Shabbat. All the people that make early Shabbat, right? You're still driving around. You're not even showered yet. There are people walking home from shul, and for them it's Shabbat. How do you usher in Shabbat?
By accepting it.
Well, Lamaisa, how do we do it? You come to shul on a regular Friday, so we're not always so careful. Sometimes by the time we're done davening, in this shul we're a little better about it. But you come to shul on a regular Friday, sometime by the time you're done with mincha, it's already sunset. That's not proper. So you have to already stop doing malacha, even before you said aleinu l'shabeach at mincha. But when you come to the early minyan in the summer, so that by the time you're done with Maariv, the sun is still high in the sky and there are people frumer than you driving around in their car. Right, maybe they're not frumer than you, but they're certainly frum. At what point during that minyan does the Isser Malacha apply to you? Or
when you say Hareini Mekabel Latzmi.
Or?
The
Shulchan Aruch has three opinions. Either Shabbat begins at Lichadodi when you turn around, or it starts when you say Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, or at Baruch Hu.
Well, Lichadodi was a relatively late addition.
Correct, but in other words, maybe it constituted an active form of Kabbalat Shabbat. Or, if you make a verbal declaration that it's Shabbat, right?
3 out of 4 wasn't bad,
right? So the truth is, I'm always careful. I've mentioned this many times over the years, right? I'm always careful. Like at the end of Mincha, there's usually like a minute left before the Shkia. I'm always careful to say Hare Kedushat Shabbat Alai, so that I can actively accept Shabbat and be Mekayim Tosefet Shabbat instead of just Shabbat being Mekadesh Me'alav, right? On its own.
Probably doesn't work when I run it.
So when you say Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbat, who is the source of sanctifying the Shabbat? Ultimately, it's God, right? Because at sunset, it's Shabbat with or without me. That is not true for the Chagim. I mean, it's true that the Chagim start at sunset on that day, but the determination of when the day is in the hands of the Jewish people through the mechanism of Kiddush HaChodesh. Right? And this is, of course, the famous Mishnah about the machlokas, about Mishnah in Brachos, about when Yom Kippur is. Right? The idea that even if they get it wrong, it's right. Right? Because that's what I would say, Mekadesh Yisrael Vahazmanim. God sanctified the Jewish people, gave power over the Jewish calendar to them through the halachic process, and they sanctify time. Right? The idea that time exists on two planes. Right? Cosmic time and human time. Right? This is a central idea in Jewish thought. So Ruah Betin v'chol Yisrael nechkaru ha'edim v'lo hispiku lomar. Everyone knows really astronomically it's Rosh Chodesh, but if Betin didn't, for whatever reason, accomplish what they had to do, harei ze mu'ubar. In fact, it is not Rosh Chodesh. It's the day 30. Ru'uhu Betin bilvad. But what if Betin were the only ones that saw it? Up there in the Lishkar HaGazit, they had a good view. Maybe they had an angle that wasn't cloudy, and for one reason or another, they were the only ones who saw it. When we say Betin, what do we mean? So we mean the Sanhedrin. You remember Masechet Sanhedrin?
I remember there's a Masechet called Sanhedrin.
Well, we learned it not so long ago. The first parak of Sanhedrin is curious because it's one of the few prakim in Shas where all of the Mishnayot, and instead of the way most prakim are, we have a Mishnah or even a little bit of Mishnah and Gemara, and Mishnah, Gemara, Mishnah. In the first parak of Sanhedrin, all of the Mishnayot are there on the first daf, and then all of the Gemara and the parak follows it. It's a curiosity. But the first parak of Sanhedrin deals with all of the different herkevim, all of the different makeups of batei din. You know, there's different batei din. There's a batei din of 3, a batei din of 23, there's a Sanhedrin. And Sanhedrin was allowed to appoint subcommittees. So the Mishnah, second Mishnah in the first parak says, Ibur HaChodesh, that's what we call Kiddush HaChodesh, Bishlosha. But those three have to be what are called Mumchim. It's not Stam Dayanim. Meaning, you didn't need the whole, like we have here, the Bagatz. Right? So there's a certain number of
it's Herkev Malay.
Yeah, and then they can appoint certain judges. This is, you know, all these discussions about reforming the Supreme Court in America. One of the ideas is to do something like that, right? Because now the Supreme Court in America has 9 judges, and they all sit for all cases. They all sit together unless one is recused for some reason, right? The idea is no. Maybe it'd be better if you had 15 judges. Right? Maybe it would be better if instead of what we have now, where like you're waiting around, everybody's like Ruth Bader Ginsburg's on the death watch, like everybody's waiting to see what'll happen. You know, either you're for or against it, but you know that if she, you know, if the president has an opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice, that's like a big deal, right? So instead, maybe there should be terms, and every president gets to nominate 4 new people, and 4 other people rotate out, and then there would be many more. There'd be 16. You know, 16 judges, you know, over a 4-term period, and they would have some rotation where at any given point 9 of them are hearing any particular case. And that would make things a little less partisan, and it would mean that every time there's one opening, it wouldn't be World War III. It would be a good thing. But that's a system they have elsewhere. It's a system that we kind of have here. No, here in Israel, the idea that you have different herkevim, right?
Talking about the idea of selection is not exactly the same.
No, correct. But the idea that they can constitute themselves in different batei din, right, is an idea here. So you have 3 expert judges functioning as for Kiddush HaChodesh, right? Ibur b'shlosha. But what are the judges doing when they're sitting for Kiddush HaChodesh?
They're doing Chakira of the Edim.
They're doing Chakira of the Edim, and
verifying that what they are testifying to is astronomically correct.
Okay.
Declaring their Chodesh.
And their declaration.
And they declare that.
So, in other words, it's not exactly the same as when three judges decide whether Reuven owes Shimon money. Dine Mamonot is a finding of fact.
It's, I think, Jonathan Sacks talks about it a number of times. He talks about two different types of speech. Speech that describes something that exists, or speech that creates something.
Ah, okay. So that's the other Rabbi Sacks also has something to offer.
The other Rabbi Sacks.
But
it's declarative. It creates something.
Right. So in other words, here, Bet Din is serving almost a ritual purpose, not just a judicial purpose. Right? Their act of... So in other words, these three Dayanim are a shlucha of the Sanhedrin. Right? Why? Why the Sanhedrin? In other words, what does the Sanhedrin do? Like, what do we always think is like the most serious, thing a Bet Din can do?
Capital cases.
Dine Mamonos, capital cases. Do you need the whole Sanhedrin to hear a capital case? No. You could do that with a Bet Din of 23. Right? The Sanhedrin represents things that are of national importance. Right? And here when you have a delegation of the Sanhedrin, three Dayanim of the Sanhedrin, they're there representing the Jewish people. Because the Jewish people are the ones that declare the sanctity of time. So Ru Bet Din Bilvad Yamdu Shnayim Veyidu Bifnehim. So what do? You have a Bet Din. And the guys on the Bet Din, they are the witnesses. So what do? Two of them absent themselves as judges. They become witnesses and they testify in front of the other Bet Din. But wait a second, a Bet Din is three. So if two leave, there's only one left. No. Obviously, this is the Sanhedrin. You only need three. But there's 70, 71 hanging around. V'yamru mikudash mikudash. Ru'u shlosha v'hen Bet Din. But if you have three people, and they're the whole Bet Din. And it wasn't the whole Sanhedrin saw it, it was just these three guys on the Kiddush HaChodesh committee, right? They saw it. Yamdu hashnayim v'yoshivu mechavrehem etzel ha'yochid. So what do? You have these three guys. So they're up late at night, because they know tomorrow is their big day. It was probably exciting when you were on Toranut to be the Bet Din for Kiddush HaChodesh. So they were up, like, you know, going over the halachos or whatever it was, and they look up and say, oh, there it is. So now two of them are witnesses. One of them remains as a judge, but you can't only have a single judge. So what do? You wake up two other guys and you make them his other members of the Bet Din. Because a single person cannot sit in judgment.
So if they couldn't rope in another two, they couldn't do Kiddush HaChodesh. They couldn't rope in another two to make the three, and they couldn't do Kiddush HaChodesh.
If they couldn't?
Yeah.
But why wouldn't they be able to?
Everybody was out for the day.
Well, the Sanhedrin was on vacation? They went on a tiyul.
Then they didn't do it.
No,
that's the beginning of the Mishnah.
Well, then, if that was the case, then they wouldn't be able to do it, and it would be a malay. Even though objectively they know that's the case, but in reality, I don't think that's what happened. Because
I don't know why anybody would think that a yachid is.
So Ben, you tell me, Ben. After all these years of Gemara learning, what would you think this question?
What
would you think that this question that you're asking?
I would think of the Gemara.
She'ena yachid ne'eman. Rashi says, "Lomar mekudash b'fnei atzmo, lakach tzarich lohashiv mechavreihem etzlo." She's saying that's obvious. Like, what's the havamina? Mm-hmm. Is there ever a case where we rely on a yachid? You were here for Sanhedrin.
Yeah, but No, it wasn't actually.
Oh. But you got the notes.
I was listening to the recordings. I knew there was such a thing as notes.
I mean, I'm not the only person in the world that ever taught Sanhedrin. You haven't missed a second Sanhedrin at home. Okay, so you can fill your days then. There are cases where we rely on a yachid.
Yeah.
In Dine Mamanos,
as a dayan.
If the dayan is a mumche and the mit dainim agree to be judged by a yachid, you can do it. I might think.
But there's still two Adim in that case. There's one.
There's two Adim, but there's only one judge.
Well, you have two Adim here. You have two Adim here.
You have three guys. You have three guys
there
who are the
three judges. Two of them become Adim, and you're left with one judge and two valid witnesses.
It's a little bit different. Ne'eman ayitay atzmo.
To be the judge. Not Ne'eman for Edut. Ne'eman to. Why? Because why? Because what is the judge or the judges doing in this case?
Verifying.
They're serving a ritual purpose. Their declaration of Mikudash,
right?
In most cases, the whole thing was a bluff. They knew when the Molad was. They knew that behind that cloudy, they knew exactly. Astro Tom knows exactly where every heavenly body is at every given moment, even though it's often covered by clouds. He knows, like, right over there at this hour exactly is meant to be Mars. Right, but what there's a cloud, we can't see it. Right, right over there is the new moon. So what do you need it for? What is it? So just the head of the Bezdin could say, you know what, it's Rosh Chodesh. No, lo ispiku lomar through the mechanism of the Eidut and the Betin without a tribunal of three, even in the presence of absolute scientific knowledge. It does not sanctify that. Why? Because time is sanctified through the Jewish people. How do the Jewish people do that? Through a process of bet din. Without it, it doesn't work. On a technicality, it wouldn't work. Okay. All right. So we got off track. We learned the Mishnah. We'll continue next week. But now we're on track now. Now we're on track now. It's not this 1 week on, 1 week off.
Till Hanukkah.
Chazara l'shigra.
Shkoyach.